sounds like a B-movie. Millions of males vanish. Fact is, there aren't as many nowadays. Not human males, not frogs, not fish.
Chemicals are moving us into a period of the most rapid evolution that this species has ever experienced.
From toys to shampoo, we're awash in strange new compounds, and we're only just learning that males are being hit hardest.
The scientists within Health Canada are telling the government, listen, you really have to move on this.
I'm Anne-Marie MacDonald. This Doc Zone asks, where have all the boys gone? There are many warning signs. A growing body of evidence shows that something is wrong with the sexual health of human males. Sperm counts worldwide have been cut in half in the last 50 years. Sperm abnormalities and rates of male infertility have radically increased. Rates of testicular cancer have doubled in the last 20 years. The question is, why? Scientists now believe that certain man-made chemicals are to blame. They interfere with the male hormonal system and are playing havoc with the basic building blocks of male sexual development. The problem is, these chemicals are everywhere. There was a time, not too long ago, when the Earth was a simpler place. 60 years ago, synthetic chemicals were a futuristic novelty. Since that time, the chemical industry has developed more than 90,000 man-made compounds, and the vast majority of them have never been tested for their effects on human beings.
During the last 50 years, we've learned how to create new chemicals and we've turned them loose. In the next 50, we may figure out what we've done.
It's like in a certain way we're on the Titanic and we see the iceberg, but we just can't turn the ship.
These chemicals are found in virtually every consumer product. Chemicals like bisphenol A make plastics hard and unbreakable. Other chemicals, called phthalates, make plastics soft and pliable. Chemicals make cosmetics smell fresh and fragrant. They make our fabrics stain-resistant and our computers flame-resistant. But have we unleashed a monster? Some common chemicals are causing profound and permanent damage to growing bodies. And for reasons we are just beginning to understand, some synthetic chemicals are far more damaging to boys.
I feel that every child should be able to live up to their innate potential, whatever it may be. But we're taking that away from them. We're taking that away from our kids. Now, why isn't it being publicized? I think it's because it's so scary.
Young adult men are also at risk. Sperm counts in college-age men have fallen dramatically in recent decades. A typical young man produces less than half of the sperm his father did, and up to 85% of it is abnormal. In a fertility clinic at the University of Rochester, researchers are tracking the crisis in the quality of male sperm. This change in the quality and amount of sperm has been sudden and dramatic.
I've been here 12 years, and when I first started, of the 10 donors we would screen, we would accept maybe 7 or 8. They had really good counts, really good motility. Over time, it got harder and harder to recruit donors because we noticed of that same college-age population that of 10 people who would try out for our program, maybe three or four would have the sperm parameters that we need.
The bottom line is that the World Health Organization standards for classifying a man as infertile have moved downward. So, for example, very early it was 60 million per milliliter, then down to 40 million per milliliter. Now it's 20 million per milliliter, and they're talking about putting it down to 10. And that's because if a man goes in for a semen analysis, that you can't have too many of them classified as abnormal.
Behind the statistics are hundreds of thousands of young couples like Jack and Natalie McGowan who have struggled to conceive.
Now you're gonna go get chased.
I was shocked how much what the incidence of infertility is in our society now. And you know, when we would go to the clinic for assessments and for procedures, it was like being in an emergency room. I mean, people were lined up down the corridors.
We were very surprised to have difficulties conceiving because we were two otherwise very healthy people. So we thought, no problem. We'd be pregnant within weeks, really.
There's three things they use to assess sperm quality, and it's volume, so sperm count, and speed, so that's, you know, how mobile they are. It's mobility or motility, I think, is how they call it. And the third is morphology. So I had a full team, good bench strength, and they were pretty quick, but they were darn stupid. They got lost. And of course, they didn't ask for directions.
So. Our reproductive endocrinologist even came out and he said, well, it's probably linked to environmental causes. He didn't go into specifics.
No.
But he did say.
After 2 years and several fertility treatments, the McGowans were finally able to conceive.
It's clear to me that what we're putting in the environment has been affecting us, and I've been aware of it for a long time. I don't see how there couldn't be an impact of our environment on my personal ability to reproduce. I think it's definitely implicated in some way.
The idea that chemicals can affect male fertility and reproduction in dramatic ways is an established fact for wildlife biologists. Since the late 1980s, Louis Gillette has been researching the sexual development of male alligators who nest in the heavily polluted lakes of Central Florida.
What we deal with when we deal with these lakes is a complex mixture of pesticides, of nutrients, fertilizers. Many of the chemicals we're dealing with are what we call old chemicals, DDT. They're persistent chemicals.
Gillette has discovered that the sexual organs of the male alligators in these lakes are a third their normal size. The reproduction rate in this colony is 90% below average.
Good deal. Perfect animal.
We're at the point now where we have evidence suggesting that pesticides have the ability to actually alter the development, for example, of the testis, alter the development of the phallus.
Great snag, Russ.
The abnormalities in the testis were related to low testosterone levels. Basically, the little alligators that we were studying as males had testosterone levels similar to what we'd see in females. But they also had, for example, smaller penis size, which was a marker of a lifetime abnormality in testosterone.
Ah, look at that. Un macho.
The strong evidence that chemicals cause sexual abnormalities goes well beyond the study of wildlife.
I was extremely frustrated in the mid-1990s because no one could answer my questions about what these things are doing on children. The work on the feminization of alligators had come out. Other work on wildlife had come out showing drastic impacts. And little boys or men are no different than alligators in terms of their general makeup. So why shouldn't it be affecting humans if it's affecting wildlife?
Of course there are differences. It's not a one-to-one relationship. But I do believe that our work is a sentinel for human health. I believe that our work is a sentinel for the health of babies, human babies.
The testes are part of the male endocrine system, the network of glands that regulate many of the body's functions. They stimulate growth, regulate our metabolism, and control reproduction. These glands release hormones that are the body's chemical messengers. The sex hormone testosterone is a chemical messenger that plays a central role in male sexual development. Some synthetic chemicals can disrupt or block the functioning of testosterone in the body, permanently damaging the sexual development of male children. This disruption of the human body's own system may be the greatest unintended consequence of the 20th century's chemical revolution. The chemical industry is only 100 years old, but it has transformed the world. The Second World War accelerated demand for countless new products: prescription drugs, food additives, synthetic rubber, nylon, and pesticides. By the early 1950s, the chemical industry was churning out hundreds and then thousands of new compounds. One product revolutionized the way we live: plastic. Virtually all of these new chemical compounds were derived from one source: petroleum. Synthetic chemicals made modern life possible. At first, few suspected that synthetic chemicals might be dangerous. Pesticides like DDT were seen as innocuous, even beneficial. By the 1960s, though, our natural habitat was telling a different story, as certain chemicals like PCBs and dioxin devastated the environment.
From the early 40s on, those people who were of childbearing age were exposed to these chemicals in excessive amounts. And consequently, by 1950, the first generation of children exposed to these chemicals in the womb were born.
Those most threatened by toxic chemicals are not adults. They are children and babies. But the most vulnerable of all have not even been born.
There is no question that the most serious effects are to the unborn child. Because the effects are permanent, and because the fetus has very few defenses against these chemicals.
This is a time when all the cells are starting to divide from each other, developing into organs. And this can start as early as 6 weeks, even earlier, after conception.
Until recently, doctors believed that the fetus was protected from contamination by the placental barrier. But the womb provides no such protection.
Everything that the mother is exposed to could potentially expose the fetus. The difference is that the fetus is exquisitely sensitive, many, many more times more sensitive than the mother, and so it's much more dangerous.
For several weeks after conception, the embryo is neither male nor female. Sex hormones orchestrate the process that determines whether the fetus will be a boy or a girl. In the seventh week of pregnancy, the male reproductive tract begins developing. Chemical exposures are likely behind a 200% increase in male genital birth defects.
This is where a boy starts becoming a boy. If he can't get past that stage with all the processes that have to take place, that are taking place under very, very low concentrations of hormones, that boy isn't going to make it to full manhood in terms of what you want in a man.
After birth, the infant is further exposed to chemicals in the mother's breast milk.
There's no question that when you show that mother's milk has contaminants, and then you actually look at babies, and you can actually take a blood sample or a urine sample and show that those contaminants are not only in that child, but they stay in that child, it is revolutionary.
But for decades, the chemical industry has chosen not to test its products on bodies that are still growing.
They want to use what happens in an adult animal to predict what could happen during development in this little 1-2 cell, 20 cell, then beautifully orchestrated development of the baby. You're building a baby in the womb, piece by piece, and if something gets in there and interferes with this building block here, the plumbing there, the wiring there, the brain, that sort of thing, that child is damaged forever. It's irreparable damage. You can't go back and rebuild that.
The chemical threat to boys is not only interfering with normal development, it may be a threat to the survival of the species. New research shows that male fetuses are being miscarried in ever greater numbers. There is strong evidence chemical exposures are killing boys in the womb.
There are more and more studies showing that before birth, between fertilization and birth, something's happening to boys. Basically, they die before they're born.
The Omgenong First Nations Reserve near Sarnia, Ontario, looks like a normal middle-class community. But Omgenong is different. The reservation is surrounded by one of the world's most extensive petrochemical complexes. In an average year, these plants release over 130,000 tons of toxic chemicals into the air.
I hadn't seen anything quite as dramatic as I saw in Sarnia. Everywhere you went, you could smell this chemical smell. And several times when I was there for a short visit, the sirens went off, indicating that there had been a release of toxic chemicals. So it's very much in your face. You see it, you smell it, you're aware of it all the time.
Omgenong is home to one of the great medical mysteries of our time. In 2006, the reservation became known internationally for having one of the sharpest declines in male births ever recorded. Instead of the normal 50-50 split, here, fewer than half as many boys are born as girls.
We looked at the births in five-year time periods and found that things were, you know, relatively normal up until the early 1990s, when we started to see this drop in the number of boys. And then from 1999 to 2003, there was a significant drop in the number of boys being born.
I think to a person in the community, we all knew there was some kind of impact from where we lived. But we didn't know that it had the significance that it had. It was just one of those things.
Ada Lockridge was the first community leader to raise the alarm about the disappearing boys.
People just kind of thought that girls run in the family. My oldest sister, she had three girls, then one boy. My middle sister, she had three girls. And myself, I had two girls.
The gravity of the problem has attracted scientists from around the world.
Omgenong was the first human case of it. So I went to a conference in the University of California, San Francisco, and it was a conference on reproductive health. So in that room were the best in the world in that field, and they referred to what happened in Omgenong as the first sign of extinction.
40% of Canada's entire chemical industry is here. The plants release shocking amounts of dioxin, benzene, and mercury, chemicals known to be toxic to human reproduction.
Because for most of these, you do have a newspaper record of these spills, right?
Pretty much all of them, yes.
Jim Brophy is a workers' health advocate who is helping the community understand the impact of the pollution on their bodies.
We know that the refineries in Sarnia are putting out very high levels, tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of kilograms every year of this, of toxic substances that are capable of altering the reproductive system and the developmental system and adversely affecting it.
I thought I was never ever going to have kids. Honestly, I didn't think I was ever going to be able to carry them. Together, we've lost. I had four miscarriages before I had my first child, but none of the doctors could explain why I was unable to carry. I even went to London. We did like a lot of testing and stuff, and they said that they could not find a reason why I would have so many miscarriages. They said there was no reasoning for it.
These chemicals disproportionately adversely affect the male fetus, so that this elevated miscarriage rate that we reported in the health study may in fact be reflecting that male fetuses are being aborted, and that's why we're getting this skewed birth ratio.
The search continues, but the answers are slow in coming.
Industry and the government have been strangely quiet about all of this. You know, they'll express a bit of concern now and again, but say, you know, we have no proof. In fact, they pretty much dismiss the birth ratio finding as being either a fluke or, gee, there must be some mistake in the math or whatever.
The falling male birth rate is a global phenomenon. There are now more than 20 heavily industrialized nations where male births have mysteriously declined. Since 1970, this has added up to almost 3 million fewer baby boys. But the danger is not only found in heavily contaminated communities like Sarnia. It also exists in our homes, in chemicals we encounter every day. Children live in a state of constant exposure to over 1,000 synthetic chemicals. They are found in computers, clothing, furniture, and bedding. They are in the water they drink and the air they breathe.
It used to be contamination was something that happened to someone else. If you were working in a factory, in a refinery, well, that was your tough luck that you got exposed.
Pollution isn't just something that's coming out of a smokestack. It's in us. It's actually in our bodies. It's in all of us. It's become part of the background chemistry in our bodies. And it's accumulating, and it's accumulating quickly.
This flood of synthetic compounds has made day-to-day life a toxic minefield for male children. Virtually all of the chemicals linked to male reproductive problems are made from petroleum.
In order to make every one of the products that we're dealing with today, you have to start from a fossil fuel. Basically, that's what it boils down to. It's the cracking of it. It's taking that crude oil, that rough natural gas that's coming out of the ground, and cleaning them up and getting those byproducts that are making it possible to make these products.
A common class of petrochemicals called phthalates is used in everything from cosmetics and medical IV tubing to food packaging and children's toys. The research of Dr. Shauna Swan began with a disturbing realization.
I turned to studying phthalates when I read that the Centers for Disease Control had found phthalates in almost everybody in the United States, and that they seem to be more prevalent in women of reproductive age, coupled with new data showing that phthalates cause significant changes in the male offspring.
Phthalates in the mother's body and breast milk have been linked to the disruption of normal sexual development in male babies.
the outcomes that we've looked at, which are called the phthalate syndrome now, which are the decreased masculinization, possibly smaller genitals, less complete testicular descent.
Many soft toys contain phthalates, despite the fact that they can leach out of the plastic and end up in the bodies of infants.
Well, the phthalates make toys cuddly and soft. They basically are the basis of the safe toy industry in our country because the children don't get hurt on nice, cuddly, soft things.
Phthalates are also widely used in personal care products. 3/4 of all name brand cosmetics, including deodorant, hair gel, shampoo, and body wash, contain them.
They're in the cosmetics because they cling to the skin and they hold perfumes. They're really great for delivery systems to perfume because they penetrate the skin, they'll move in, and they'll take the perfume with them, which then actually increase the lifetime of the perfume. And it's in hair conditioners. It's that stuff that makes the hair so beautiful and glossy, and you can manage it.
It looks clean. It smells clean. It feels clean. We've been marketed that this product is clean. So it's very difficult to think of it as dirty, as polluted, as toxic. So there's a huge perception barrier to get over.
You know, it's a skin cream, and you put it on your hands. You say, well, I don't eat it. But, you know, you put that skin cream on your hands and you wait for a few minutes. Is it still there? No, it's gone. Where do you think it went? It didn't go in the air, okay? It went into your body.
One phthalate in particular, used in PVC plastics, is raising enormous concern because of where it is used and who we use it on. Anywhere you look in a neonatal ward, you find one of the most common plastics in the world, PVC vinyl. This flexible material contains a phthalate called DEHP.
DEHP has been classified as a reproductive toxicant by several agencies around the globe. A reproductive toxicant is a compound that has effects through stages of development on the human reproductive systems.
Incredibly, PVC is used to make medical devices such as intravenous tubing, catheters, and blood bags. Many studies have demonstrated how DEHP in medical devices can leach from the vinyl, ending up in the bodies of vulnerable children in staggering amounts.
On average, a person will take in up to 30 micrograms per kilogram of DEHP a day, and that's considered a safe level of intake. However, in a hospital setting, for example, an infant or a child may receive up to 200 times that amount in a single exposure. And that exposure can be daily over multiple days or even over months.
The frail organs of premature male babies are especially susceptible to damage.
The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services has stated that it's a serious concern, particularly with intensive medical treatment of male infants, that this may be an adverse effect on the reproductive tract. The most sensitive measure of developmental effects is atrophy or shrinking back of the testes.
Some hospitals are now replacing their PVC equipment with non-toxic forms of plastic.
We really subscribe to the precautionary principle, which says first do no harm and take precautionary measures so that our patients have the safest products possible. And so we just made the decision that this is something that we better look at.
Of all the chemicals raising concern, none is more notorious than bisphenol A. 7 billion pounds of this chemical are produced yearly. It is the raw material for one of the most widely used plastics in consumer society, polycarbonate. Polycarbonate is a hard, rigid plastic used in a vast array of products, from DVDs to baby bottles. It is also at the center of a public health firestorm. Up until recently, most of us had never even heard of bisphenol A. However, it's been around for a very long time. And we've only recently discovered how dangerous it is.
Bisphenol A was first synthesized in 1891 by a Russian chemist. And it was at a time when there was just a lot of new synthetic chemicals being created. So it didn't have necessarily a commercial purpose at that point. And it really wasn't until the 1930s that commercial use for the compound was investigated.
By the 1940s, bisphenol A was being developed as a possible drug for hormone treatments after it was discovered that it behaved like estrogen in lab animals. The turning point came later when it was also discovered that BPA could be used in plastics as a way of making clear, shatterproof containers and in the epoxy resins which line food cans. Now its history as a synthetic estrogen has come back to haunt us.
It has been tested in so many systems now. And during that same critical period where sexual differentiation takes place, where the brain is developing, where the pancreas is developing, and it interferes with every one of those systems. I mean, this is like a model chemical of how you could really go wrong.
When it comes to, you know, a flashpoint like a baby bottle, it certainly captures the attention of Canadian citizens who say, what? What did you just tell me? I've been feeding my babies, or I have raised my children using these baby bottles for years. Now you tell me?
Tosca Gardino's son, Luke, was born with a birth defect that has been repeatedly linked to endocrine-disrupting chemicals.
When we were bathing him, we found that his one testicle looked like it was deflated, that there was nothing in there. So I was concerned that his undescended testicle would mean that because it was inside the body, surrounded by all this warmth, that it would affect the health of the testicle and his ability to reproduce.
It's already on.
In his case, the testicle was so high up in the body that it was actually behind the stomach muscles or abdominal muscles.
Undescended testicles can be corrected through surgery, but boys who are born with them are 8 times more likely to develop testicular cancer and 7 times more likely to be infertile.
So Luke did go through the 2 surgeries, and in the end, the testicle, it's down, it's healthy as far as they can tell. They won't really know until he's a teenager when they see that it's actually growing.
The operation was a success, but the problem has not completely gone away.
After the second surgery, about a couple of months later, we noticed that the other testicle had started to rise. Not nearly as high, just halfway, still in the sac, but closer to the body.
You love spinning this.
I feel guilty that I didn't do more. I feel responsible. I feel like I should have known better, that I could have done more. I've tried to console myself by understanding that back then not many people actually knew facts about
it. This is way too wet, see?
Oh, I bet you it rolls really well now. I had 3 different naturopaths at the time, and I had a midwife, I had a doula, and a doctor. And I was told about herbs to avoid, you know, certain foods to avoid, but no one mentioned anything about containers to avoid.
Tosca has since set out to educate herself.
I have no doubt that the things that are in our environment, it is affecting us on many, many levels, especially on the long term. But to think it's directly related to my son, I don't really want to know that.
A mom shouldn't have to be a chemical engineer. That's not her job. Or a dad shouldn't have to be a chemical engineer. But for us to force onto that responsibility is ridiculous.
By any measure, bisphenol A and phthalates are dangerous to the male reproductive system. Despite this, millions of pounds of these chemicals are produced yearly. Again, the question is, why?
Dr. Steve Hitchies.
When it comes to the safety of phthalates and bisphenol A, Dr. Stephen Henches is the main spokesman for the chemical industry.
In fact, both bisphenol A and phthalates have been subjected to numerous rigorous and comprehensive reviews by government agencies in the U.S. and around the world. After more than 5 decades of use, no reliable evidence has shown bisphenol A or phthalates in consumer products to have caused any harm to any person.
The claim that chemicals like bisphenol A and phthalates have no significant effect on the body is contradicted by hundreds of independent studies. Among the smaller number of studies that found no effects, almost all were commissioned by the chemical industry. This fact has a disturbing similarity to another earlier controversy.
I want you to focus on another fact that has been published in the peer-reviewed literature. Of the studies of bisphenol A that were funded by government sources, including the National Institute of Health, over 90% of them find adverse effects on animals. In contrast, none of the studies funded by industry report adverse effects. Now, some of you will recall the testimony in 1994 before Congress of the 7 heads of tobacco companies who swore that there was no link between cigarette smoking and cancer. As you listen to industry interpretation of the data on bisphenol A and phthalates, I would encourage you to think about that.
The chemical lobby is one of the most powerful in the world. Since 1976, the U.S. government has banned just 5 chemicals.
Industry is using its power, its influence, its wealth to keep the regulatory system at bay, to keep government regulators and agencies away.
The chemical industry has realized that by creating this infrastructure of alternative science, they can paralyze regulators willing to buy into this and totally paralyze the agencies.
Think everything's okay?
Senator, as studies become available to us, we at FDA apply the
studies from whom become available?
Whoever.
To
if they've been
the only studies you're getting right now, have you asked for studies from independent sources?
We don't normally ask for independent
sources. Then you don't protect the American people if you don't ask for them. If you don't look beyond what's handed to you. Thank you.
What happened is these same scientists who did a lot of work for tobacco and made a lot of money saw this as a very effective career, and they set up their own companies, and they will take money from polluters, from manufacturers of dangerous chemicals, and they will do studies to show they're really not very dangerous.
They realized that quote, educating the public is critical, and you know, misinformation is just as effective, done correctly, as information. And it works.
I don't think there's any question that companies are looking at this through purely question of profit. And if they could get 1, 5, 10, 20 more years of selling the product without controls, they've been very successful.
In the case of bisphenol A, the issue has taken on a life of its own. Responding to mounting public concern, retailers like Walmart began removing it from their shelves. And then, a surprise announcement.
Safety questions about plastic bottles. Canada's health agency today took the first official step to take some plastic baby bottles off the market. Our chief scientist.
Although our science tells us that exposure levels to newborns and infants are below the levels that cause effects, we believe that the current safety margin needs to be higher.
I think the government understands it has to do something. I think maybe the scientists within Health Canada are telling the government, listen, you really have to move on this.
That's not yet. Who's that?
The powerful symbol of the baby bottle may mean that time is finally running out for bisphenol A.
I'm worried that what will happen is that this will be just limited to, say, baby bottles or infant formula, because this is about so many different things. It's about endocrine disruptors, It's about a regulatory system that's completely broken. It's about the material world that we've decided to build and the chemicals that we've chosen to build that environment.
Canada's stand on bisphenol A is a major victory and a rare one, because the problem is much bigger than one chemical. It's a shocking statistic. Of the 80,000 chemicals in use, 85% of them have never undergone testing for their impact on the human body.
We have coated the northern hemisphere with chemicals that we know can be transferred from the mother to the offspring and affect how offspring develop. And if we don't reverse the production and the release of these kinds of chemicals, we're going to see widespread dysfunction among the human population.
The debate over the safety of man-made chemicals will never end, but we will never again live in a world without them. It will be decades before we understand what we've done, but it is already clear that we are permanently altering the sexual development of male children.
Look how long it's taken the idea of global warming to catch on in society, and we still have large numbers that deny it's happening. That's not scary. That's going to happen three generations down the road. But when you're talking about your own kids or your grandchildren, that is something else.
Synthetic chemicals are not only damaging the health of boys, they may be bringing about the end of our species as we know it.
I think this deluge of new chemicals that has arrived within the past century, chemicals that are novel to human body chemistry, I think they are moving us into a period of the most rapid evolution that this species has ever experienced. It's changing what types of genes make it through to the next generation, and who has the wrong genes are going to be less able to have progeny. That's the definition of evolution, and I think that's what's happening today.